Opening narration.
Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome to the Akatra Dialogue. Today, we're doing a deep dive into a figure everyone thinks they know, but whose real story is, well, far more compelling and ultimately tragic. Elvis Presley.
That's right. We're trying to get past the image, the caricature of the king, and really explore the human being behind it all.
And our guide for this is Peter Guralnick's incredible two-volume biography, Last Train to Memphis and Careless Love. These are just monumental works.
Absolutely definitive. Guralnick isn't just recounting facts. He's digging deep into the cultural context, the music, the psychology. He spent decades on this. Thousands of interviews, primary sources. It's meticulous.
So our mission today is really to understand Guralnick's perspective on how this electrifying force of nature from the 50s became the figure we saw in the 70s. It's not just about music. It's about fame, authenticity, loss, things that resonate far beyond Elvis himself.
Exactly. Guralnick frames him as this central, almost archetypal American figure. His rise, his struggles, his tragedy tell us something about the American experience itself.
The chronological journey.
Okay, so let's trace that journey. Guralnick starts us right at the beginning. Last train to Memphis, Tupelo, Mississippi. Pretty humble beginnings, right?
Oh, incredibly humble, dirt poor. And Guralnick really emphasizes the intense bond with his mother, Gladys, almost. Symbiotic. And then there's the shadow of his twin brother, Jesse Garin, who died at birth.
Yeah, Guralnick suggests that fueled this lifelong feeling of being maybe chosen,
yeah,
but also this deep loneliness underneath it all.
Definitely. And musically, his childhood was just soaking it all in the gospel from church, the country music on the radio, and crucially, the blues he heard from the Black community. Moving to Memphis then put him smack in the middle of this incredible musical melting pot.
A shy kid, though, right? Not outwardly bursting with confidence initially.
Not at all. Uh-huh. Which makes the Sun Records story even more amazing. He kept going back, trying to get noticed by Sam Phillips.
And then that famous session, July 1954. It wasn't planned, was it?
No, that's the magic Guralnick captures. They were struggling with some ballad, Elvis was frustrated, and he just spontaneously launched into Arthur Crudup's That's All Right. Scotty Moore and Bill Black jumped in.
And boom. Rock and roll just kind of explodes into existence in that moment. A fusion of everything he'd absorbed.
Exactly. Not calculated. Pure energy. And the reaction was immediate. The early live shows, the regional hits like Blue Moon of Kentucky, it was electric.
Then the move to RCA, Heartbreak Hotel, national television.
Yeah.
And the explosion onto the national scene. But that brought the backlash too.
Oh, massively. The establishment was terrified. The hip swiveling, the energy. It was seen as dangerous, corrupting. Elvis himself seemed kind of bewildered by it, all the adoration on one side, the condemnation on the other.
He becomes this huge star, buys Graceland, starts making movies, peak fame, 1957-58. But then Guralnick points to a massive turning point.
Yeah. The death of his mother, Gladys, in August 58. Guralnick portrays it as the central emotional catastrophe of his life. The anchor was gone.
And almost immediately after, he's drafted, sent to Germany. The first volume ends there, leaving him at this huge crossroads.
A different person goes into the army than the one who comes out, according to Guralnick, which brings us to Careless Love and the Unmaking.
Right. So the army years in Germany, 58 to 60, what happens there?
Well, it solidifies his isolation. He starts gathering the guys who'd become the Memphis Mafia around him, creating this protective bubble.
And crucially, the introduction to pills.
Yes, amphetamines initially, to stay alert on duty and maneuvers. It starts there, this reliance that would grow tragically. And of course, he meets a very young Priscilla Bouley.
Then he comes back, and it's straight into Hollywood. Guralnick paints this period, 61 to 68, as pretty bleak artistically.
It's heartbreaking, really. Movie after movie, mostly formulaic, lightweight stuff. Colonel Parker's strategy, quantity, keep the money rolling in.
Parker, we need to talk about him. Architect of the success, but also
the warden of the gilded cage, as Guralnick puts it. He controlled everything, focused purely on the business, often dismissing Elvis's own artistic instincts or desires. Elvis felt trapped, earning millions, but creatively stifled, completely missing the musical revolution of the 60s.
Until the 68 comeback special.
Yeah.
A moment of defiance.
Absolutely. Against Parker's wishes for a schmaltzy Christmas show, Elvis, pushed by producer Steve Binder, went back to his roots. Black leather, raw energy.
He proved he still had it, that the fire was still there.
Undeniably, Guralnick calls it his last great stand for his own artistic soul. It was powerful.
And it led to a creative resurgence, didn't it? Memphis Sessions, Vegas.
Yeah, 69 to 73, there's this burst of great work. Suspicious Minds, In the Ghetto, those initial Vegas shows were triumphant. He was engaged again.
But Vegas, it became another kind of trap, didn't it?
It did. The relentless schedule, the pressure, the increasing reliance on prescription drugs to just function, to sleep, to perform. And then a separation from Priscilla deepened the depression, the isolation.
Which leads into the final years, 74 to 77. Guralnick describes it as the long decline.
And it's just painful to read, honestly. Erratic shows, health deteriorating rapidly, Graceland becoming this nocturnal world fueled by drugs and enabled by the people around him. Paranoia, loneliness.
So his death in August 77, Guralnick presents it not as a sudden shock, but almost inevitable.
Sadly, yes. The logical, tragic conclusion to that long, slow, unmaking process that had started years, even decades before.
Core philosophy and values.
So stepping back from the chronology, what drove him? What was his core philosophy, if you can call it that? Guralnick digs into this, right?
Yeah, it's complex. At his core, there was this deep desire to please, stemming perhaps from that early insecurity, that need for love and acceptance, especially after losing his mother.
So not necessarily a driving ambition for power or control, but more for connection?
I think so. And initially, that connected directly to the music. The joy he found in performing, in that fusion of sounds, was genuine. His early philosophy was just about the music itself, the feeling.
But later, it seems like that got lost. Was there a philosophy around success?
It seems more like success happened to him, and he was swept along. His values were rooted in his Southern upbringing. Politeness, generosity, loyalty to his friends and family. But those same values, like loyalty, maybe made it hard for him to break away from controlling figures like Parker or the enabling presence of the Memphis Mafia.
And his view on failure, he seemed terrified of it, didn't he, going back to being poor?
Absolutely. That fear, Guralnick suggests, kept him locked into the safe choices, the movies, the Vegas routine, long after his soul needed something else. His purpose became maintaining the image, the success, rather than pursuing authentic expression.
Three pivotal turning points.
Guralnick's narrative is full of turning points. But if you had to pick three absolutely critical moments that changed everything for Elvis.
Okay, three huge ones. First, undoubtedly, has to be that Sun Records session in July 1954, discovering That's All Right.
The Big Bang.
Exactly. Before that, he's a nobody, a truck driver with a guitar and a dream. After that spontaneous moment, everything changes. The potential is unleashed. The path to fame opens up. Rock and roll is arguably born. It's the foundational moment.
Okay, number two.
For me, it has to be the death of his mother, Gladys, in August 1958. Guralnick makes it crystal clear this wasn't just grief. It was a seismic shift in his emotional landscape.
The anchor cut loose.
Completely. She was his confidant, his grounding force. Her loss created a void he spent the rest of his life trying to fill, often in unhealthy ways. It amplified his insecurities, his neediness, and arguably made him more susceptible to control and isolation later on.
A profound personal tragedy with huge professional consequences down the line, and the third turning point.
I'd point to the decision to essentially abandon serious artistic pursuits for the Hollywood movie treadmill in the early 60s. This wasn't a single event, but a sustained period, driven by Colonel Parker.
Gilded cage closing in.
Right. It represented a fundamental shift away from Elvis the musical innovator towards Elvis the lucrative commodity. It led to artistic despair, disconnection from contemporary music, and set a pattern of choosing security over creative risk that characterized much of his later career, barring exceptions like the 68 special. It was the start of the unmaking in earnest.
Human lessons and reflection.
Guralnick's portrayal is so human. What can we, you know, take away from Elvis's story on a personal level?
So much. I think one key lesson is about the danger of losing touch with your authentic self, especially under pressure. Elvis's talent was undeniable, but when it became purely about commerce, about meeting expectations,
it started to die. That struggle between passion and paycheck or passion and pleasing others is pretty universal, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it connects to the isolation that can come with success. We see it today with celebrities, but it applies elsewhere too. As his world expanded publicly, his private world shrank. That's a real warning about building genuine connections, not just surrounding yourself with yes men or isolating yourself.
And the idea of the American dream turning sour. Achieve everything, yet be deeply unhappy.
Yeah, it's a powerful cautionary tale. External success, money, fame, adoration doesn't automatically equal internal fulfillment. Without that strong inner core, that sense of self and purpose, it can all become hollow, even destructive.
It also makes you think about unresolved grief, like the loss of his mother, how foundational traumas, if not addressed, can echo through your entire life.
Definitely. And finally, maybe the importance of maintaining agency, of keeping control over your own life and decisions. Elvis, despite being the king, ceded so much control over his career, his health. It's a lesson in setting boundaries, taking ownership, not just drifting along or letting others dictate your path, even if their intentions seem good initially.
Three final takeaways.
Okay, if we had to distill this incredibly rich, complex story down to three key takeaways from Guralnik's perspective, what would they be? Let's try. An emotional one, an intellectual one, and a universal one.
All right. For the emotional insight, I'd say it's the profound tragedy of loneliness in the midst of adulation. Elvis was arguably the most famous person on the planet, yet Guralnik shows him as desperately, achingly lonely, unable to find genuine connection amid the chaos of fame. That hits hard.
Yeah, it really does. Okay, an intellectual insight.
For me, it's understanding Elvis not just as a singer, but as a crucible of American culture. Guralnik makes you see how his music synthesized blues, gospel, country, black and white traditions, and how his rise reflected and shaped deep cultural shifts around race, class, and youth in post-war America. He's more than just music history, he's social history.
That's a great point, seeing the bigger picture. And finally, a universal insight or life lesson.
I think it comes back to that core conflict. Authenticity is fragile and requires active protection, whether it's artistic integrity, personal values, or just your sense of self. External pressures, commerce, fame, expectations, even fear can erode it. Guralnik's Elvis shows us that you have to consciously fight to hold on to what's real and true for you, because losing it can mean losing everything that matters.
Closing narration.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.